glass. It's Jaded Fucking Gamercast, bitch. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. I am feeling manly. I did manly things today. I fixed a carburetor all by myself. I moved things. I did yard work. I took care of sick wife and family and had an argument with my in-laws. Oh, look, a bottle of scotch.
Ooh, he brought the bottle with him. You know shit is serious.
I just needed more than one drink. That was all it came down to tonight. I was just like, fuck it. I need more than one, so we're going to pour a big one to start and just see how the night takes us. You know, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to promise anything. Oh, god damn it.
He always says that before a couple drinks, but we all know he puts out.
Especially when I'm sitting. Because the problem is while you're talking, that's when I'm drinking.
Oh, ditto.
So it happens that way. What are you drinking today, Nathan?
Bacon rainbows.
Still the same bacon thing, hey?
Hey, you know what? It was so good that I actually went back to the liquor store this week and, you know, went to buy a case. And he was just like, yeah, but I don't know if we're going to get any more in because we ordered 10. They shipped us 3. We called them up to ask, you know, what's going on. And our supplier was just like, yeah, I just can't get any more. So I walked out with 2 cases.
So it's going to be 3 weeks of Nathan hooked on the Mapo Baco.
Well, I'm bringing some up next week.
Oh, I know. So that's what I'm saying. So this is week 2. Week 3 will be podcasting with Maple Bacon. Wonderful. I can't wait. I was going to go look for it today, but I thought, you know what? I can't cheat on scotch. Not on a day like today.
Baby, you know I love you.
That's the truth. So let's get into what we did this week in hobby. I did fucking nothing.
I got a game in.
Hey, how'd that go?
Really good. He conceded at the bottom of turn 3, so
that is typically a good outcome, as people say.
Yeah, no, like I said, it was really good. I took my demons out again, as always. Ran up against a Warriors of Chaos army, and he just, you know, he just really over relied on the 2 big blocks that he had. Because question for you, Lang, simple math. Chaos Lord plus 18 hand weapon shield Tzeentch Warriors. Are they going to win against 40 Bloodletters with a Herald?
Well, no. But well, I could see how. But I could see how somebody who plays that unit on a regular basis thinks they're indestructible.
Yeah, you know what? That's fair. But no, like I said, it was just one of those things where it's just like I got every charge off that I wanted because I was able to block him so he couldn't charge me whenever I needed to. And I was able to use Lore of Shadow to debuff him. So when I'm hitting him on 3s and, you know, he dropping his strength and his toughness all across the board, it was just a massacre, you know, a really one-sided game.
Awesome. All right, yeah. I've got plans to be playing Mr. Matt Damon, a little bit of fantasy next weekend. But outside of that, it has just been one of those crazy weeks filled with things like stomach flus and corporate training and things of that nature. So hobby really came secondary for me this week. On top of that, a funeral as well. So it was definitely one of those weeks, to say the least, and hobby took the back seat. Considering that I also finished putting all the seats into my car. So I've been driving my new my restored car around and enjoying that a lot. So that's my hobby. I've been doing hobby things. It's just
Not workshop
stuff. You know, fuck them.
That's how they feel about you too. I mean, pretty much.
We don't have to exchange names. I mean, really, let's get into higher learning before this gets out of control. This early in the podcast, higher learning for this week is Orcs and Goblins for Warhammer Fantasy. Now I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there right at the start. Okay. Cause it seems like every time we talk about Orc and Goblins and we get into higher learning, somebody comes back and they're posting on the Facebook page about how wrong we are and the points are wrong. And no, that's total. Like, that unit sucks. You guys are dumb. Like, everything you're talking about makes no sense. Maybe you should fucking play Orcs. I do. I just don't play them often. I do
it's
have
like
an
me
orc
with
army.
Wood Elves. I have right. an army. I just haven't played them in a while.
So, you know. If you're going to do it, turn it up to 11. That's all I got to say.
Challenge accepted.
That's where that goes. and I am just absolutely enraptured by this splinter I have in my hand. So why don't you start, Nathan?
All right. While Lang picks at himself, I guess. Okay, so let's talk about building competitive Orc and Goblin armies. I mean, you know, our first run through on Higher Learning, we kind of went through and we talked about, you know, things that are good about Orcs, but let's talk competitiveness. And first off, and I'm going to say this, leave the Black Orcs at home. Simply put, I just think that Black Orcs, as beautiful as the models are, and they are, just when you compare the points cost of a Black Orc to that of a regular boy and even a biggin, they just sort of fall apart for me. So, I mean, for me, there's absolutely nothing that a unit of Black Orcs can do that a unit of biggins cannot do for cheaper. The only exception being, obviously, that Black Orcs are wearing heavy armor, but you play Orcs and Goblins. You don't give a shit about armor, and most of your stuff doesn't have it. So,
well, building a list around it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. Because, I mean, you know, Black Orcs are special. They're not even part of your core, and you still need your 25% core. So for me, I would much rather take, you know, as my big sort of center of the army, a big unit of biggins. I know a lot of people online are in absolute love with Savage Orc biggins with a pair of hand weapons.
Yep.
And you know what? The damage output on such a unit is despicable. So you can't go wrong with that. My only complaint is I think that the Savage Orc models are silly looking. But hey, you know, whatever floats your boat, right?
I think there's a certain level of that aesthetic that you kind of need to accept with Orc and Goblins, that there's going to be things that look pretty badass, and they're going to be standing right beside the guy who just looks like a fucking cartoon character. Like, there's really not much that you can do about that. So, like, if you're playing that army already, you've already kind of accepted the fact that this is the way that your army will look.
Yeah, you know what? That's fair. But, yeah.
Like,
you know,
the Wevran.
Nice. You know, it's funny that you should mention that, because I'm on the GW site and I'm looking at the Savage Orcs, who, again, look cartoonish and silly. And as one of those, have you got, is the Savage Orc Great Shaman on Warbore, which is fucking badass and pimp and, you know, all sorts of things like that. And you're just like, really? How can you get it so right here? But anyway, I digress. If we're going to talk about, again, go back to building a list. Take a big unit of Orcs. Hoard them up and really go to town. Personally, I'm an Orc guy. I know a lot of people especially like to do the math hammer and talk about how Goblins are better point for point, but Goblins are for bitches. That's what it comes down to. So sure,
go ahead. That's what the fucking, yeah. That's the rep on the street. I mean,
that's right. All... I mean everyone knows that only bitches use Goblins.
Only bitches use Night Goblins.
That, right. No, so I mean, like I said, it's just, I think the biggest problem with dissecting an army like this is the book has a million different army list options. I mean, with the amount of core and special and rare available to an Orc and Goblin army, I really feel that they are the most diverse army in the entire game.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of armies that we can sit there and go listing off the things that are, oh, you got to take one of these. Mm-hmm. These are great for the points. Normally, when we talk about that with an army, we get about four or five choices that really, really stand out. And for armies like that, that's when you start seeing a lot of repetition in lists. With Orc and Goblin, there's probably 8 or 9 choices that really stand out. And that's when you start getting into that diversity between various competitive lists.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, again, you know, just kind of beating around the bush, I do think that chariots are a must. I think that Orc and Goblin are definitely an army that benefits from chariots, because aside from your big unit of biggins, maybe a unit of boar boys or savage boar boys or, you know, whatever, might have a little bit of combat punch, but, you know, your guys don't have a whole lot going for them. Your strength 3, sure, the chopper rule mitigates this, and you can take one unit of biggins, which will become strength 4, and with the chopper rule is good. Your characters are killy as all shit. You know, like, straight up, a Black Orc war boss is fearsome. But I find that, as a rule, your guys just do not have the combat punch. You're never going to beat Saurus in a bang-up fight. You're never going to beat Chaos Warriors, things like this. So, for me, I feel that chariots are kind of the answer. They are what are going to help you in sort of those prolonged combats to charge into a flank, do the impact hits, and get that kill res that your army is quite frankly incapable of getting. So, I mean, for me, I think two or three Boar Chariots is a no-brainer. If you like, you can take the nine Goblin Chariots, because, hey, unit of three Chariots is hilarious. But I just think that the higher strength and toughness and save on a Boar Chariot is just a little more reliable, and kind of hang them in the back. So unlike other armies that use chariots very aggressively, you want to use these to sort of help break combats. If I was personally going to do an orc army, again, avoiding goblins because, you know, bitches, I would take orcs and I would run them with deep ranks to break steadfast and then rely on things like chariots to win me the combats. And I think that would be the way that I would go about taking orcs and goblins, because I've seen, you know, I've run up against tons of orc armies with my demons where they just cannot go toe-to-toe with me because, I mean, demons are an elite combat army, and they just aren't. So, I mean, I think that accepting the fact that you're going to beat up on humans, you're going to beat up on Skaven, you know, you're going to beat up on you know, maybe elves, probably not, though, because ASF and hatred will hurt you bad, but, you know, it just... except
unless
the fact
pussy,
that you're
unless
middle...
you're fighting pussy elves, right?
Right.
Right.
You know, fucking pussy tree hugger elves. Yeah, you'll beat up on
you know the
combat.
Ones with no special abilities. Yeah, those elves.
Yes.
Yeah. You know their bows, right? Their bows hit harder, kind of sometimes. Well, you know, eventually.
Yeah. Hey, listen. As a wood elf player, I can say that I can probably shoot one unit off the board. Take more than one unit and you've got me and you fucked me. Like that's what it comes down to. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the big deal is it, with the exception of your big unit of biggins, which you want to run horde and kind of keep in that sort of 40 man range. That way you have a few wound buffers. Everything else should be small frontage, 5 and 6 wide and deep. Just go deep. So you're breaking steadfast and then rely on your more, you know, your weirder things like your boar boys and your chariots and your special choices to really rack up the kills that you need. Because in a straight fight, you're losing to so many armies.
See, and that's funny because I think the last time that we really went into orcs and kind of went into orcs in depth, and I think this was back when the book was released, we had this conversation about, are you better off mixing or are you better off going specifically one way or the other? And I believe that you were actually in favor of mixing back then.
You know, it's true. See, the thing is again,
Do you have a response to that, Mr. Senator?
Absolutely not. This interview was over.
That's fucking gotcha journalism, bitches. And he just slaps the mic off the table, turns the table up over. Fucking socialists.
That's
liberal
right.
Media, fucktards.
I thought this was Fox News. Damn it.
This is Fox News.
Yeah, this is Fox News for sure. No, I mean, again,
that's
it comes
copyright,
down
okay?
To...
Playboy Channel, if you're listening, you cannot have a show that's called Fox News Report and like, have Glenn Bareback fucking... I need another name. Damn it, I can't do it. Fuck, I almost had it. I almost had it. I like Glenn Bareback, though.
Glenn Bareback is actually a really good one.
Copyright Langrenovich, Jaded Gamercast. You want that shit, you gotta pay, bitch.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. I don't know. Again, I think what's really, really changed my view is having played against them, you know, a handful of times in a tournament setting, and I find that the goblins are always just sort of there. You know, it's just like, I ignore them. For the most part, because I know I can get away with ignoring them. And when I do eventually engage with the goblins, they're pathetic. I mean, I remember at Onslaught Game 4, I ran up against an Orc and Goblin army, and I had my one Herald of Khorne single-handedly tie up a unit of Night Goblin spears with nets, you know, 60 strong in a horde formation, for about 4 game turns. And I'm just like, this is a 140-point character, you know? And they just cannot perform. And again, you know, when I ran into Mr. Brian Sin, he had that big horde of 100, 10 by 10 with nets, and he charged my Bloodletter horde. And because his general and his BSB were dead at this point, he lost combat and, oh, stubborn 5. And they just ran away. And, like, it's just, goblins have never performed in any game I've ever played against orcs. And that's why I would say, why take them? I mean, again, the math hammer might work out that in a perfect situation with your general behind them and your BSB there and deep enough ranks to get that steadfast and reroll, sure, they might make an okay tar pit, but I know this. Yeah. You know, I'm going to get in and I'm going to target characters because orcs are a leadership army. You know, priority number one for me is kill the general, kill the BSB, and then watch as shit runs away.
Right. Well, and to be perfectly honest, like, I'm still on the side where, you know, I kind of feel like if you're going to play in one direction, play in one direction, play orcs or play goblins. But really, you know, like, I do understand the idea of kind of mixing those lists together. I would definitely agree with you on the point of black orcs. I think you and I had this conversation a long time ago because I was trying to say that they were worth it, and I think it ended with me going like, huh, okay, I guess not. And yes, I think that one of the biggest problems with Orc and Goblin as you're playing them is that you aren't really ever going to have that perfect situation. And I think banking for it is the biggest mistake that Orc and Goblin players make. Whereas you kind of say, you know, you've got three or four things that you really want to focus on and just get those on the table. One of the things that I really feel is effective for Orc and Goblins is to mix it up as much as possible. Don't take too many of one thing. Don't overload on one side. You know, like you might say, take six chariots. I'll say take three chariots and take a giant and take two pump wagons. You know what I mean? Like, for me, the idea is, you know, if you have enough stuff on the table, it's not always going to be about, you know, getting your supplementary stuff in, because a lot of times even your supplementary stuff isn't going to do jack shit. You know, Chaos Warriors are going to stomp that chariot just as quickly as they stomp your orcs. The problem is always going to be, you know, can you get enough of it in, or are you able to pick the exact right thing for the right moment? You know, are you able to get that giant into that group? Are you able to get two pump wagons in on a flank or something like that? And when you're playing in especially larger sized games, the need for a much larger support section in your army, special and rare, it becomes really, really important, because you can't just take those same four chariots that you played in the 2,000 point game and bring those same four chariots into the 3,000 point game and just add, like, you know, a couple of extra characters and a monster. Like, you would have to double that number to have them be as effective in that point level, which becomes a real challenge for Orc and Goblin. Now, as you said, they're the most diverse book out there, so this is definitely something that they can handle. For me, I agree. I don't think anyone's going to disagree that a huge horde of biggins is a great choice. Whether or not you go savage is up to you. I think that going with, like, the normal Orc biggins is just as good. I mean, I wouldn't whine and complain if somebody said, you know what, I like the way that they do better, and I save enough points that I can, you know, cut points here and take an extra pump wagon. Okay, fine. Like, that's totally cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm personally, like I said, personally, I do prefer the Savage Orcs, but only because you can then combine it with the Shrunken Head, which increases the war paint to a 5+ save.
Oh yeah,
because at that point, you know, you're basically, for 10 points, I mean, plus the cost of the character and the unit, you are demons at that point. 3 attack, strength 5, 5 up ward. I mean, it just adds a little bit of reliability. I mean, obviously, a 5 up ward is susceptible to shit dice, as, you know, I've experienced hundreds of times before, you know. But yeah, so I mean, that's the thing, is that's the only reason I prefer them, is the 5 up ward is going to be better than the light armor. But like you said, the points you save going with normal Orc boy biggins, you know, you can't go wrong. I mean, that's a chariot.
Right. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about with Orcs is that there is this mentality that what you want to do is pick your combats. And I've always kind of felt like that never really works with Orcs. And especially with... I'm going to go ahead and use Tom Carter's Orcs as an example, because he won at Onslaught, I believe. And
He did win. I just don't know if he took Orcs because I wasn't there.
Oh, okay. I'm fairly certain he took his Orcs. But he also won it out of the basement. It was him and I at the head table. And so I played the list. I saw the list that he was playing. And, you know, his list is very similar to kind of what you're talking about, in the sense that he's got, you know, he sticks to pretty much having just Orcs. He doesn't take a lot of chaff. He's got chariots on the table. He's got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And really, what I find interesting here with the way that he built his list is it was actually very few hordes. Actually, I don't even think he has a single horde on the table. He just has a lot of large frontage, you know, decent-sized ranked units, and he has a ton of them. I think he's got six or seven units he's putting on the table, and they're all big units, and their majority of them are Savage Orcs. And with that in mind, it's not about picking your battles anymore. It's about putting everything out there, seeing what comes out on top, and just reacting with the fact that you've got more numbers than your opponent, you're smart with the way that you play, and you do have enough supplementary stuff to help win you the fights you really want to win. And
yeah,
these are the things that I feel that a lot of Orc players kind of get wrong when they start looking at Orcs saying, like, I need a horde. Oh, I need a big fucking horde. It's not the only option. It really isn't. Because the horde is great, but the, like you said before with the goblins, you know, Orcs leadership isn't that much better if the general and the BSB are out of the picture. You know what I mean? It's still a 50-50 chance at that point that big unit's just going to run off the table. There's a lot of ways to mitigate that, and you definitely are going to use those things to mitigate that. But all I'm really saying is it's really not the only option. I think that you can get away with having a lot of big but not horde-sized units on the table and just use those units effectively.
Yeah, and I mean, on that, again, another effective Orc army that I ran into did take Savage Orc Biggins but kept him at 19 with the level 4 caster with the shrunken head. That way, if he ever drew Watchtower, he just dropped those bad boys in because, I mean, fucking 30 strength 5 attacks every time that they have to walk out and swing. I was even afraid to send my bloodletters into that.
Well, I mean, obviously.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, I get 11 attacks with my champion. Yeah, and they get 30. I mean, fuck, I'm going to lose every single round of combat, even though I have hatred, even though I'm strength 5. It's just, I'm going to kill, what, 3-4 orcs?
Yeah, you got to lay those templates into that unit.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. So, I mean, in that particular game, we did draw a Watchtower, so I was magic missiling the ever-living hell out of it because, again, I did not feel comfortable with any of my units being able to break that unit. And, again, it was 20 men. You know, that was it for his biggins. Everything else in the list was those sort of, you know, deep ranks, you know, 6-7 wide because, you know, again, you need to be able to have stuff to win the combats. And that isn't going to be your core troops. Those aren't your core units of boys.
Right.
So that's pretty much where I'm at with Orcs. I still think that they're a good army. They're a fun army. Yep. I love the models. I keep every, you know, this whole conversation, I actually have 10 Orc boys, like, on my painting desk, one of whom is half finished. And I keep, like, eyeing them. And I'm like, maybe. So...
Yeah, you know, I think the only reason why we didn't touch on characters or special characters or like wizards and things of that nature is because, you know, you do have the freedom to kind of take any combination that you want. Obviously, you're going to want a level 4. Obviously, you're going to want to have one of your Orc generals on the table, you know, whether you want to kit him out for defense, you want to kit him out for attack, have fun, go crazy. I mean, really, it's just like, You can have a lot of fun with the Orc and Goblin army, and you have so many options. It's kind of a ridiculous, it's a ridiculous prospect to have to start picking when you look at the environment that we have for list building right now in Warhammer, and 80% of the armies out there, there's one or two clean builds that are really competitive.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. If we were talking about, you know, really any other army, even the new release books, I mean, if we were going to talk about ogres, I think we'd both come up with a consensus that leads to a very, very similar build. Same thing with Tomb Kings, same thing with vampires. But again, with orcs and goblins, it really just comes down to, you know, leave the black orcs at home, but everything else is really viable. And I mean, for characters... I personally don't feel that the Orc book needs any special characters. If you want to take one, go nuts, have fun, build a themed list around him. You know, because for one, I personally love the Gorbad model, like just absolutely in love with the Gorbad Ironclaw model.
You tried to build a bunch of lists around him, just like feverishly trying to make a real competitive list work around him. But every time, listen, going like, oh, but if I draw this scenario, I'm fucked.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, Gorbad loses Blood and Glory because he is the general and BSB, and it straight up says that if he breaks, he's dead.
All right.
You know, because like a BSB, removed from play, yeah. So it's like, yay, 3 points gone. And if he's in a unit, that's 4 points gone. Try to not be at your breaking point at that. But no, like I said, the Gorbad model is fantastic. So if you love a special character, go ahead, build a list around him. I mean, even Azhag the Slaughterer is a nice model, even though the Wyvern still kind of looks terrible. But it looks better than the other Wyvern.
It does, yes.
But yeah, I mean, you've got so much options and variety in your character selection. I would just say that being 8th edition, you need to take a level 4 wizard, whether it be a goblin or an orc. And then what kind of goblin, what kind of orc, completely up to you. But take one of those, and then take whatever else you want. I mean, BSB and level 4 wizards are standard, but I think orc war bosses are phenomenal.
Yeah, and I also just want to take this moment to remind everybody to donate to the Wevern Society of International Society of America, because you know their motto is very true. Wevrons, they're just dragons with Down syndrome.
They really are, and they need our help.
They'll have that same face.
The thicker necks. I mean, look at them. Seriously, compare the high elf dragon.
And before anybody gets upset, my daughter's retarded, so I can say that.
It is true.
I figured I'd just throw that out there. But anyways, I clink with my cup of microphone here. Let's get into the main topic for today's show, shall we? It's a very interesting landscape that we have now for Warhammer 40,000. And one of the things that I found myself thinking kind of on and off throughout the last 2 weeks since I heard that Games Workshop was going to be releasing three new flyers. It was kind of a generic Space Marine flyer, an Orc flyer, and the Necron flyer. And all of these things, you know, very clearly are going to be built into the next edition of Warhammer 40,000. And I always kind of had a love-hate relationship with the idea of flyers. I've never used a flyer in any of my lists, mostly because I just haven't played a ton of Warhammer 40,000 in the last few years. But really, you know, they've always been a part of the story. They've always been there. Thunderhawks and, you know, Nightwings and all those types of things. They've always been in the story. And when Battlefleet Gothic was really big, they expanded that into the ships, and it just kind of went bigger and bigger and bigger. There was always this idea that you would be able to take Warhammer 40,000 and you would be able to take Battlefleet Gothic and you would be able to be given rules to make this game more grandiose, just bigger, more in-depth, just more of the things that we've always loved. And it didn't work with Battlefleet Gothic. Then there was the idea that, oh, well, you know what? You can go, instead of Battlefleet Gothic, you can take what you have for Epic 40,000 and play Epic 40,000 and take that down and move that into your games of Warhammer 40,000 and play it that way. But that didn't work. And it's never worked. And we've never been given clear rules. We've never been given anything that's even been remotely playtested. And it's always just been this idea of just like, well, you know, if you care that fucking much, just go for it, man. Do whatever the fuck you want to do. I mean, have a fun time. And I've heard of people while I was working for Games Workshop who would say, they would come in and they would say like, oh yeah, well, we play Epic and then we take that little base of orcs and we say, well, that's worth 10 orcs. And then we say that that's this and that's this and that's blah, 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 blah. And that's all well and good, but it's not the same. It's not the same as Games Workshop releasing a very large quantity of flyers in the last 2 years for Warhammer 40,000, making them a common sight now. I mean, what was it, 6 years ago? If somebody showed up with a flyer from Forge World, you were just like, fuck me. And everyone came to the table and it was this amazing fucking thing. And nobody knew, oh, it was so amazing. How does it work? I don't know. I kind of read the rules, but I didn't really understand them. You remember those times when it was so did I kill it? I don't know. What's a glancing hit on a flyer do? Fuck, I don't remember. That was the way that the game was played. Now it's a staple of the game. You can't go to a tournament without seeing flyers all over the board. it's commonplace. It's now part of strategy. It's part of list building. It's part of the tactics that we talk about when we talk about these lists. You can't talk about Imperial Guard without talking about their flyers and how effective they are and how they play into the game. So the question kind of becomes, and again, I don't want to get into flyers or epic or gothic, but the question is where do they go from here? Where do they go from flyers? Where do they go from the game that they have now without getting to that realm of a Warhound Titan that sits in the corner and doesn't do anything? You know what I mean? Like, what are we missing in Warhammer 40,000 that's going to help this game continually grow? Because obviously that's what Games Workshop wants. And that's what we as gamers want. Go for it.
Oh, it's my turn. Okay. you know, it's funny because when you texted me this, I was expecting the conversation to go somewhere completely different. So all of my canned content is out the window. But
I'm sure we'll get to it.
Yeah, I'm sure. We go off topic. That's a given. No, I mean, I think you're right. And honestly, I don't think that there is anywhere else to go, because at the end of the day, they have Apocalypse. And Apocalypse is where they can pull out all of these retardedly broken, unbalanced, unfair models to go. Because what does a Phantom Titan cost? Does it cost like fucking like 2,000 points or no, more than that? I think it's like 4,000 points plus its weapons. And you know what? After reading the rules for a Phantom Titan, it's just like, it can't die. It'll kill everything just systematically, just turn after turn. It's just this weapon of mass destruction that is literally unstoppable. So I mean, that's Apocalypse. I mean, no one's ever run an Apocalypse tournament, or at least recently, because I think when it first came out, people had that idea of, hey, we'll work Apocalypse into tournaments, and then they realized there's absolutely no game balance. And you know what? I think that works for Apocalypse, because it is Games Workshop's war machine. You know, hey, there's no game balance, but everything's broken, so I guess go nuts. Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think where can you go to make it sort of grander and more epic? I really don't know. I mean, you're not... I mean...
Okay, I'll take back the idea of saying grander and more epic, because what I really mean by that is more in-depth. More things to talk about, like more things that come into play when you start talking about tactics. You know, like we've talked about psychic powers on a regular basis, and we've said like psychic powers can be expanded to the point where this is a real solid thing that gets incorporated into every single list and is incorporated in such a way that it's something that is integral to list building.
Yeah, absolutely. In which case, I think if I was sort of wish listing, you know, slash thinking out loud, I would think that that formations are going to get added in, because at the end of the day, I think that Apocalypse formations are very, very interesting. I mean, if I was going to take anything from Apocalypse and say, okay, let's bring this over to 40K, you know, because I think they're pointed correctly, I think all of these different things, I would have to go with formations, because they just add so much different flavor. They require you to take certain units in certain quantities. Sorry, I'm a Tyranid player. It's the only formations I know off the top of my head, so fuck anyone expecting a Space Marine something. But I mean, for example, the Endless Swarm. If I want, you know, I think that an Endless Swarm in Warhammer 40,000 would be incredibly interesting, because I would have to fill up all six of my troop slots with three units of Hormigons, three units of Termigons, each at a minimum 20 strong. You know, and then I have to pay points on top of that in order to get these additional abilities. And again, I think that that might add a very, very interesting element to Warhammer 40,000 that sort of takes it to the next level, is saying that, you know, these things are common for the army that you play, or maybe not even common, but these are, you know, heroic examples. The Cadian 12th, you know, at this famous battle led by Lord Solar Macarius, they did this and they were made up of this. And so you can, if you take all of those units and you pay this many points, these are the special abilities that you get. And I really think that that would help, you know, bring this sort of air of like the sort of this breath of fresh air into Warhammer 40,000. You know, unlike now where, you know, if we're going to go back to our orcs conversation where we talk about how every army has like two or three, you know, really good builds, every army, when I compete at the top levels of tournaments and I go to tournaments and I look at lists, everything is fucking carbon copies of these same two, three themes. And I think that, you know, flyers from a visual standpoint are awesome. you know, and I think that's why we're seeing that push towards it, because the Valkyrie and Vendetta kit is still one of the most impressive looking kits that GW makes, from a model standpoint. The short bust is huge. I personally hate the aesthetic, but hey, some people love it and can't get enough of it.
It's metaphorically, you know, huge.
Yeah, it's metaphorically, right? You know, and I have no doubt that the new Marine short bus is gonna be, you know, widely received. I think orcs are gonna be similar size footprints. The Necron Flyer is gonna be a similar size footprint. And I think what this is doing is this is bringing those sort of large, awe-inspiring kits into the game. And I think if we wanted to take that the extra step, I think that formations would be an interesting addition to the game.
I think that that's actually a pretty good point. One of the things that I know that Games Workshop had kind of in their head for a long time and that they've moved away from is the idea of really, really customizing these units. Not just the gear that you can give them, but the special abilities that they get, you know, when it was build your own guard or it was build your own Marines. I mean, these were things that really got people fired up and added a really huge dynamic to the game. Back in the day when you were able to do these things, it was, you know, something that the new player or the player who wasn't interested, they just glossed over it and they just went and played the list that they wanted to play. You know, you still had a separate codex for your Blood Angels, for your Dark Angels, for your Space Wolves. There was nothing there that stopped people from playing Space Marines the way that they wanted to play them. It was just giving people the opportunity to do this. And one of the things that I feel that, considering the size of this hobby, and considering the amount of time that we really put into this stuff, the idea of being able to build your own unit is actually something that kind of grabs my attention. And to kind of put that in a specific context, it would be something where you could make it an elite choice, or you could make it anything specific and just say, like, right, you can kind of build your own unit. You can come up with your own idea for them, your own backstory for them, because there's 100 different things that don't fall under the category of troops, heavy weapons, snipers, punching guys. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more to the game than just that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's something that they can do that will also improve the game mechanics. Almost simply because of the fact that you can overbalance this so that they maybe aren't as points effective, but they'll actually help support your list in a really good way.
You know, maybe, I don't know. I can't see them doing that, though, because...
Well, it's not about whether we can see them doing it, because obviously they're not going to fucking do it.
Right?
Because, well, it doesn't sell them more kits.
Well, the reason I say that, though, is old 40K used to be that. Rogue Trader used to have shitloads of entries where it's just like, yeah, make your own demon prince. You know?
Oh, yeah, Guard was like that, yeah. And Space Marines were like that. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, I mean the fully customizable, because I know that back in the Rogue Trader days, you could literally pick units and just build them, and there was like a fucking point costing matrix, just like the vehicle design rules were, where it's just like, oh, you have a vehicle, okay, if you this is your armor ratings, you're starting at this base points, this many points for these guns, and you know, so on and so forth. Rogue Trader used to do that. Second edition toned that down quite a bit, had a couple of different things that were very mutable. Third edition, only really Tyranids could do it. Fourth edition, they took that away. But I mean,
yeah, you know what? I forgot about the build your own vehicle rules.
Ah.
Because those sucked.
Look at my Bane Blade. It's not a Bane Blade, but it's 200 points cheaper. But it's exactly like
it a is Bane everything Blade. I like about a Bane Blade. No, yeah. No. I mean, I get that.
And you're just like, God damn.
And I do, I do definitely see the drawbacks of it. I just think that you would be able to do these things. Now, I'm not saying that people should be able to build their own armies, but...
Here's the thing. I know what you're getting at, and that is that old Guard doctrine system and the Space Marine trait system. And you know what? Those were fucking brilliant. Because nothing allowed you to create an army that was your army and that was unique to you and that played exactly how you wanted to play, like those systems. Yeah. And then 5th edition came along, and 5th edition was the edition of streamlining. Everything needed to be streamlined. The rule set had to be streamlined so that everything was simple and the same. Every codex that came out had to be streamlined. And I'm really hoping that 6th edition comes out and it brings that sort of flavor back, because I think... What 8th edition fantasy proved to Games Workshop is that Gamers can handle a complicated rule set. You know, you can throw rules at us and special rules and caveats and things like that, and we can keep it straight and we can play and we can have a lot of fun. So you don't have to keep dumbing everything down. And I that was sort of the design philosophy of Alessio. And he's gone now. So I think that's why we're seeing the pendulum swing the other way, where they're adding things back in. So I'm really hopeful that, you know, with Chaos Legions coming out, because if internet rumors are to believe, they will be the first codex released after 6th edition. Yep. I hope that we can see a lot more of that sort of fluid army construction style, because really, when it all went away was when Alessio became head game designer for the entire studio. You know, that's when you have the Chaos Codex, which was the paragon of build your own army. You know, here are your rules. Go nuts. You want to play Alpha Legion? Here are your rules. You want to play Emperor's Children? Here are your rules. That book was taken away. And then after that, the Guard was re-released, taking the Doctrine system away. The Marines were re-released, taking the Trait system away. And everything has always been this move towards streamlining and having it fit within this box. But I think that you're starting to see a push away from that, because when you compare the Dark Angels Codex, which was the first codex of that sort of style, that sort of sleek, you know, take out everything you can style, compared to the Grey Knights book. And you're basically looking at two completely different styles of codex writing. You have the Dark Angels, which is very minimalist, take everything away, give players three options, let them go nuts. Then you have the Grey Knight Codex, which has a fucking page of grenades. Oh, we got 12 different grenades. Take what you want.
I used to play bass for Page of Grenades.
You know, you used to play bass for a lot of bands. I'm really thinking that you were like a band whore, because you probably say that about it.
No, man, I just dropped a lot of acid. But no, you know what? Like, and again, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying, but I think that you're missing my point. The big point here is that this is something that needs to become an integral mechanic of the game, is the fact that we're all smart enough to know what the drawbacks of a unit are. We're all smart enough to know why a Space Marine costs more than an Orc. We know these things. We are able to break down the points cost essentially per point, per stat, to a general number, to the point where we would be able to build our own race in our own heads and write it down and tell you exactly what the points is, because we created terms like Math Hammer. Like, it literally, like, the idea that this needs to be taken out of the game, and not because it needs to be taken out of the game for balance issues, but oh no, it needs to be taken out of the game because the 12-year-old whose mom bought him the starter kit is too confused by the idea of traits. And that's really the problem here. The problem here is not balance, because there was nothing wrong with what was there in the Guard Codex, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and it was the same thing with the Space Marine book. So really, this whole thing, it wasn't that they tried it and it failed. They tried it and it succeeded. And then they went, hey, we're, you know, a corporate entity, and we look at these things and say, well, you know what? Change is great, Lang. You need to go into a training course that's 7 hours long called Understanding Change, so that you know how change works and what the change curve looks like, even though you took this course 8 months ago. I fucking work for a bank, okay? I know how...
Nothing changes for a
bank. I know how CEOs think, and it's just like, this whole idea is insane. That they're just like, oh yeah, this was great. We came out with this thing for the Guard where you could build your own Guard army. We sold 10 times more Guard than we ever had in the past. Let's change it back. Mm-hmm. I feel like it needs to be an integral mechanic of the game for every single army. And that's my point. Well,
and I think you're right. I agree. And I think you actually nailed it on the head, because I remember when Jervis came out to defend, you know, in his Standard Bearer article, came out to defend his writing of the Chaos Space Marine Codex. One of the key points that he pointed out was that new players found it confusing. And again, like you said, boo-hoo, you know, boo-fucking-who. You know, if you're having problems, play the army book as written. Just look at the first half of it and ignore all of the Legion stuff in the back.
And that's what they did.
And you're right. You know, having worked at Games Workshop, that's exactly what they did.
Or they would come into the store and ask you questions and buy more shit.
You know, exactly. So, I mean, you know, that's the thing where it's just like the trait system worked great. I never ran into a guard army that I thought was unfair and unbalanced using the trait system because everything was costed appropriately. I mean, I remember playing a guard army that had like sharpshooters and like close order drill, and another one of those traits, and he was paying almost 100 points for his 10 guardsmen. And it's just like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with you paying 10 points a model for your 6-point guardsmen.
He was playing
Praetorians,
wasn't he?
5 points now. No, this was at Conflict Vancouver. But I know who you're thinking of, but it's not that player.
Thinking of a player. I just loved Praetorians.
That's fair. I was always a Valhallan man. Trench coat.
Fucking cool. Talarin's bitch.
Right? But, I mean, like, that's the thing where it's just, like, nothing was ever unbalanced with that. I mean, I think the only one that we always got a good laugh at with, you know, working at Workshop was always the Marine book. Because what was the advice we always gave to players looking at traits? Pick the two advantages that you want to take.
Oh, right.
Build your list and then look at the disadvantages and take those that don't apply.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I mean,
you only took one dreadnought. Yeah, take that one that says you can only take one dreadnought.
There we go. Well, look, great disadvantage. But I mean, you know, the big thing with that was, even though Marine players were basically able to take two free traits, none of the traits were unbalanced. You know, you had traits like, you know, any unit can trade bolters for bolt pistol close combat weapons. So if you wanted a combat Marine army, there you go. Can trade heavy weapons for a second special weapon. I mean, fucking Chaos Space Marines can do that now. It's not unbalancing to have 10 Marines with two Meltaguns. I mean, fucking Blood Angels do that shit on their assault squad. So, I mean, it's just, all of those things, none of them were unbalancing, but it did allow everyone to take the flavor and build their lists so that they were unique to them. And I agree. I think that is a game mechanic that should absolutely be present in the game as a whole, because I think that when 5th edition first came out, a lot of players were kind of happy at how streamlined everything was. It was easier to play. It was faster to play. You know, it was easier to know what your opponent was having. But I think now that we're at the tail end of 5th edition, we've had it for, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yes.
The heavy gamers, people that have been playing, you know, one or two games a week, every single week for 5 years, they are bored to fucking death of this game. Because, I mean, that's been my big problem with 40K. I, to this day, build 40K lists. You know, I want to play
40K.
You know, where it's just like, you know, I want to play the game. I want to like the game. I want to enjoy the game. But I am so fucking bored of those same three scenarios. I'm so bored of the fact that every single time I play, every Grey Knight army looks the same. Every Blood Angel army looks the same. Every Space Wolves army looks the same. And it's just, everything about the game is just so boring now. And I think that if 6th edition were to come out and were to introduce mechanics like this in the codexes, because obviously it's not like the core rulebook is going to say, hey, everybody, take your troops choice. Now you can go nuts and have fun and change things up. And, you know, it'll be crazy. But I would like to see, obviously, a more complicated game system, because I really don't think you could simplify 40K anymore.
Well, no, it's
just not possible. I'd like to see a little more depth.
Listen, I've never, ever felt that simplifying 40K is the answer, and it's the same thing with fantasy. I think the only time that I ever felt like a simplification was actually a good choice was some of the simplifications for the assault phase. That was it. It was the only time where I was just like, you know what? Assault phase was taking too long. It was getting bogged down. You know, it was the third part of a turn, and it took three times as long as anything else. You know, like, I felt like when they simplified that, they made it a little bit quicker. I was all for it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but again, combat in 40K has been something that Games Workshop has never, ever been able to balance. I mean, in 3rd edition, it was the most broken phase of the game. You know, all of the power armies in 3rd edition were combat armies. Why? Because with fucking transports and jetpacks and, you know, fantasy-style overrun, you could literally sweep an army off on turn two, thanks to I mean, it took you 3 hours, because you're, like you said, the fucking assault phase took forever, but you could just run through a whole army. 4th edition, they tried to simplify it and change that, but again, I could still sort of get into a unit, wipe it out, consolidate into another unit, wipe it out, consolidate into another unit, and just go on. And even then, with 5th edition, they still haven't gotten it right. So I hope they get combat right. It'd be the first time in this game that they figured out how close combat should work.
Well, but, it's the same problem that any video game has, like an MMO, right? We look at MMOs like fantasy MMOs, and we look at sci-fi MMOs, like, you know, what was a really good one to choose? Like RF Online was a good example, and obviously the Star Wars games are good examples as well. And the guy will have a fucking assault cannon that's twice the size he is, and he'll go and it'll be the same amount of damage as a guy who punches him. Because those things are not exciting when you want to be the guy who punches things. That's all, right? Like, yep. And that's always going to be the problem, you know? And there's never going to be that real solid balance when it comes to close combat. Because in war, it's trenches and it's this and it's that. And very rarely are you stabbing a guy with your knife. Everybody has a rifle. You know, in real life armies, there aren't guys running around with swords because you don't need a fucking sword in a fight.
World War One was the
that
last
was the
time
last
we did
time.
It. And machine guns put a quick end to
right.
that.
Right, and again, I don't want to get into the logistics of, you know, chain swords and power armor because I buy into it as much as anyone else does. I'm a fucking nerd, okay? But really, I feel like that's always going to be the problem with Warhammer 40,000 is you've now leapt into the realm of, yeah, but would they really want to fucking, like, run in and punch each other? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's always going to be the problem. Write it into a story like Dan Abnett, and it's amazing. You know, try to rationalize it, and it just never really happens for you. But yeah, I think that that particular side of it is something that I would really like to see. But
I agree, though. I mean, you know, we are jaded gamers. We've played this game for a long-ass fucking time. And quite frankly, I miss, you know, being able to say, oh, you play guard, and having no idea what kind of guard army. Does he have a drop troop Elysian army? Is he playing an all-mecked-up Steel Legion? Is he playing an all-rank-and-ordered Praetorian? Is he, you know, an outflanking?
Well, and that's why I'm, like, holding on to my Talarn army. Like, I've got a huge Talarn army. I'm just holding it till I'm ready to play them again. Till I'm excited to play them again.
I mean, I sold my Valhallans because I was excited to do them in the last book. And then again, this new book of let's remove all of the fluff and the flavor of the army. Let's make it so that you've got, let's be honest, 2, maybe 3 competitive builds. And everything revolves around this sort of simple core. It just doesn't excite me. It doesn't interest me. It's why I sold them. I mean, I made mad profit because bits by weight, bitches.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Hey, who wants 2,000 points of metal Talarn? I'll let him go for $300. Wow, what a steal. This guy's an idiot. No, I tripled my
I got all my shit. Woo! But, you know, I think that this is kind of a topic that every gamer has at one point or another in their head where they're just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could, like, fire, like, gas and, like, use nerve gas on people? You know, and there's always going to be those weird special rules that, you know, and just ideas that kind of fall under, like, oh, what if you had this kind of special rule? I think the only other thing that stands out in my mind in terms of really seeing a different mechanic come into the game is building lists around a specific idea in terms of how a real life army would be built, right? Like, and again, I'm going to break this down. Garrison duty, right? Like, if you're going to be holding a fort, you're going to typically have less guys. You're going to typically have different artillery. You're going to typically have, you know, less fighters, more sharpshooters, you know, runners, things of that nature. Or if you're going to be a planetary assault, you're going to have more drop pods. You're going to have this. You're going to have that. I feel like, and again, this is where we start getting to the extremes of gameplay, and not necessarily tournament gameplay, but the extremes of gameplay. is building a list that is handicapped dramatically because of its, okay, and I'm going to use the word theme, because of its theme, like say you're a planetary assault theme, and that's the theme you've chosen, but your opponent has to play that theme, right? So they have to play that mission. Like if I build an army specifically for a mission, like say, okay, the mission is recon, and I know I'm going fourth edition, so fuck off. Is there a recon in fifth?
I've played like two
fourth. Games. I'm going fourth, time. Assholes.
Go fourth.
But really, like, okay, like say for instance, they give you this information and they say, right, okay, recon. You are building a list for recon, right? You build a fucking Gaunt's Ghost list, right? Because it's a fucking recon list. But they're just like, right, you get no vehicles. You get absolutely none of this, none of that, none of this, none of that. And it handicaps the fuck out of you. But you can still take everything appropriate for recon. And then when you go to play an opponent, you say, right, I'm playing a recon list. You play recon.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that it? And again, like, that's one of those things that I kept thinking about going like, oh, I love Gaunt's Ghost. I would love to play Gaunt's Ghost. Like, I really would love to do that. But you never play a scenario where their talents or skill sets actually come into play. It's like, when are Gaunt's Ghost going to show up at a fucking pitch battle? Like, it's just, it's yep. never going to fucking happen. They would never be deployed to that type of a fight.
Well, I think really what you're talking about is remember back in the old Third Ed codexes how they all had that one army-specific scenario where they're like, oh, yeah, Dark Eldar, it's a slave raid. This is how it goes. Dark Eldar are attackers. This, yes, you know, go nuts.
Yes.
I would like to see something like that, and I would like
Wouldn't
to see
that be
game mechanics where it's just like, no, you roll off, and the winner, you know, has the choice of playing a rulebook scenario or their codex scenario, because I think that again that allows you to build that sort of themed army, a list that's going to do well in your scenario. But even if I'm going to take a step back and say from a list building's perspective, from a generalship perspective, I would love something like that, knowing that my take all comers list has to take all comers, because I could potentially be playing Dark Eldar in a slave raid. I could potentially be playing Tau in a aerial assault.
Well, exactly.
Whatever the fuck.
And that's
so
that's
it's just like my list has to be able, you know, I'll build it to whatever theme I want, but it still has to be able to compete. I mean, I think that's an interesting idea, but I want to throw one more thing out that I think might kind of breathe a breath of fresh air. We'll see what people think. If you think I'm full of shit, go on Facebook. Tell me so. I love it because I get bored at work. So go nuts. I would like to see Forge World army lists tournament legal again, because even if I'm just here on the Forge World site, I can see that for Imperial Guard alone, they have Death Corps, Krieg, Elysian Dropshroops, and Talarn Desert Raiders, and they all play very, very differently. And I know that Forge World came up with different rules for them, specifically for... you know, in all their Imperial Armor books. So, I mean, even if you were to just say, hey, you know what, I can actually take Elysian drop troops. Now, suddenly I'm a guard army that you don't know what to expect because everything is deep striking. I've got Halo-style warthogs with heavy flamers and las cannons. I've got guys dropping out of the sky. And it brings that sort of flavor back to it, whether it be Corsair Eldar or whether it be Red Scorpion Marines. But I think that even if Games Workshop just opened it up and said, you know what, all Forge World lists are legal. You can take them to any tournament. This is part of 6th edition. Forge World lists are A-OK. I think that that would be a good thing because it brings back what we were talking about, where it brings back that idea of this is my army. You know, because how many people have bought a Death Corps of Krieg army because the models are, quite frankly, the best Guardsmen models ever produced ever. They've built them, they've painted them up, and then they play them exactly like every other boring old Guard army of 10 guys in Chimera, 10 guys in Chimera, 10 veterans in Valkyrie, 10 guys in Chimera. Because, first of all, Valkyries don't make any fucking sense for Death Corps. And second, again, the models are fantastic. This is an army that is designed that from its fluff and from the weapons they have available to them, this is a trench fighting army.
Right.
So they have very interesting things like the mole missile. Sorry, I'm trying to find it. Where basically it's this bullet that burrows through the ground and eventually comes out in another trench and explodes. They've got the Hades breaching drill, which is exactly that. It's a fucking chimera that digs through the earth. So, I mean, an army like this would be super awesome because it would be a guard army that plays unlike any present guard army. A mole launcher. That's what it's called. And so,
I used to play base from mole launchers.
A lot of acid. Lots and lots of acid.
Jesus Christ.
So I mean, I think that might be one sort of quick fix. I mean, if 6th edition 40K came out and said Forge World lists are allowed, I think I would probably pick up a Deathcore army.
Well,
being perfectly honest, because I said the models are so nice.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to paint this army?
Well, I think that it wouldn't be that much. Okay, let me break this down. I don't think that it would be that much work on Games Workshop's side if they were to just say to Forge World, right, listen, we want to propose this contract. And in this contract, all of your lists become Games Workshop approved, tournament legal, chapter approved, whatever the fuck you want to stamp on it. Us saying that it is fucking 100% tournament legal, play it wherever the hell you want, everyone agrees, these are the rules. But they give them a list of specifications where they say, right, the playtesting must equal this. The, you know, here's the our ETC style restrictions, you know, and...
Oh, but Lang, you're wrong. 40K is the most balanced game in existence. There are no restrictions.
Well, I'll just stop there. Fair enough. But if they really do just, you know, kind of break it down and say, hey, guys, you know, here's everything that we want you to do. What you need to do before you actually post this is that you need to submit it to us with all of your playtesting information, you know. And we all know that if Games Workshop is good at anything, it's the legalese and making sure that you sign all of those documents and that everybody counts their Lord of the Rings stock. I mean, it's just this is part of the way that the company works. And so there's really nothing stopping them from doing this, considering that Forge World is dependent on Games Workshop. I mean, they're basically sister companies. But the fact that Games Workshop just kind of ignores all of these opportunities there is really kind of ridiculous. All right, so I'm going to push us through here to the end of the show, which brings us to the stupidity check for this week. I've been reading a lot of forums lately, and I've been reading a lot of...
Why? Go on.
I've been reading a lot of blog posts, and I really just want to ask anyone who's listening to this, if you're going to use the term broken, just fucking use it correctly. I'm so fucking sick and tired of reading every other post that somebody's putting down there being like, oh my god, fucking high elves are broken. Oh, dude, this thing is broken. This whole army list is broken. Fucking 5th edition and 8th edition are broken. Magic is broken. Okay, listen. Do you remember when 5th edition, or what was it? I can't remember if it was 5th or 4th edition 40K came out, and the rules for grotesques that basically said that they could not be hurt by anything unless they were... insta-killed on a 6?
That was the first ever Dark Eldar Codex released back in 98 with 3rd edition.
Yeah, I know the Codex. But there was a point where their rules changed where that rule just stopped working. No, it was the fact that they block line of sight.
Right? Yes.
It was the fact that they literally block line of sight. You couldn't shoot at anything behind them. But that changed when they said in the rule book that you can shoot at fucking anything.
So in 3rd edition, you just lined up your 10 grotesques and went, you know, right. Lol. Like, you couldn't target anything.
Exactly. Okay, so, yeah, that was their rule. When that edition came out, and that rule literally ceased to exist, it was still in the books, it was still there, but the core rule book just basically said that you just ignore it. That is literally the right situation when you can say that that rule is broken. Because it ceases to function.
For me, I think the big one that I always did was in third edition, Dark Eldar jet bikes were the only things that could turbo boost, and then they added it in for any bike could turbo boost in fourth edition. It wasn't so much as being broken, but it was just like, well, now the points costs are fucked, because Dark Eldar bikes were point costed to have turbo boost be special to them, and then when they gave it to everybody, you're just like, yay!
I think the best part about that was extra. I was like, 2 months after they wrote that bullshit White Dwarf article that you and I were so pissed off about. But anyways, no, but that's my whole point, is it's just like, listen, you screaming and bitching and complaining about things being broken is completely wrong. Listen, the only time anything is ever broken is if it literally does not function. The idea that something is broken in the sense that it's a good thing for that army, like people would always say like, oh yeah, you know, what was it called? Master of the Black Arts, or the thing that gave you two dispel dice for vampire counts. Oh, it's so broken. That's such a broken thing. No, it's not broken. It actually works. It works well. It works better than it used to. That is not the same as broken. It's just become a term that now kind of makes my skin crawl when I read internet people just being like, oh, God, you know, this army's so broken. Like, I can never beat it because of this bullshit rule. Demons are so broken. No, they're actually not. Their rules are just really fucking good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Like that's all it comes down to. So for the sake of my sanity, and the fact that, hold on.
Oh, more scotch. Shit, son.
Cup two down. Just stop it. Like, just, you know, use your words. Other than broken. That's all I'm asking. That really is all I'm asking. Like, just stop using that term and throwing it around like it's fucking candy.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that you say that, because really, basically what it comes down to is I play Army X and I expect this, and when that doesn't happen, whatever caused it is broken. And that's what you see that so much in fucking fantasy. And no offense, but Lizardmen player are the worst. Because Lizardmen expect their slam to dominate every facet of the magic phase, so when they run into other magic special characters that are better than them, they're broken.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Teclis is broken.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, why? Because he's better than my slam.
Oh, yeah.
Well, go fuck yourself.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Or if they run into an army that has a specific unit that their army is not necessarily equipped to deal with, that unit's broken. Oh, yeah. My God, Black Orcs are so broken because they tear through my skinks all the time. You know what I mean? Like, it's just stop it. Just please, for God's sakes, stop it. Because it makes absolutely no sense, and it's just a stupid, stupid thing to say. Saying it makes you stupid, you're a stupid person.
Yeah, you're
right. That's been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
This podcast is broken.
Totally broken. Absolutely.
Actually, I do want to follow up with one last thing before we get out of here. Mr. Brian Sin, Mr. Malorian, sent us in an email here. He said, the 40K Mayday tournament is sold out and Onslaught was a huge success. So if the Jaded Gamercast bump had occurred, it is certainly gone now. The graph probably looks fairly good by now. That's true, Mr. Brian. With War Machine picking up steam in the community to the point where there is a 40-plus person league and extensive tournament support, not to mention a number of friends that you have playing it, would you two consider giving it another try? Thank you for sending in an email, Brian. We appreciate it. You know what? I think there's...
Oh, I thought you weren't even going to answer. I thought you were going to outro at that point, but go on.
Go fuck yourself. No. I've said it before. The thing that I have against War Machine more than anything is not necessarily the rules of the fact that people are playing it, because that was the case 5 years ago. It's just the fact that I don't like the way the models look typically. I feel like the proportions are really bad. I'm not necessarily a big fan of the style. I've gone through literally like the entire range on a regular basis and have really not found any army that grabs my attention and kind of speaks to me and makes me go like, oh yeah, I want to play that army. And that honestly is the biggest motivator for me. If Warhammer 40,000, or I'm sorry, I'm going to even scratch that and say, if Warhammer had no armies that aesthetically I liked, I would not play it, even though I think the rules are amazing. And that's all it comes down to. So Would I consider it? Yes, I've actually considered it a lot. I've had a lot of people approach me and say, you should start playing War Machine. You know, we'll help you get into it. You can come out, you can do this and that. And I've considered it a lot. But really, until an army really grabs my attention or a specific unit really grabs my attention, I'm going to be hard-pressed to want to get back into it. Or not back into it, but get into it.
I'm kind of the same way. For me, with Lang, there's really no army that I look at and I'm just like, oh my god, I have to paint this. And then when you combine that with the fact that everything I've ever heard from people that I know and whose opinion I trust, because no offense, Lang, I don't take your opinion on movies anymore. But hey, whatever. I know that
you
we
didn't
have
like fucking Equilibrium, so it's not like I listen to you either.
Hey, that's fair. And I will probably never see the Avengers until one day you sit me down at your house and make me watch it, as has happened with several movies. Well,
but you don't go see movies, so what the fuck do you know?
It's true.
I watch many fucking movies, it's retarded.
Listen, I've seen The Cabin in the Woods. If you haven't, then I'm
winning. I've heard it's very
that's
good.
Oh, dude, you went to see Avengers and you didn't see that?
Dude, Avengers was fucking
for
amazing.
Shame. For shame.
Avengers was fucking amazing. Listen,
which I've heard from every Marvel fanboy, and I've heard it's long and boring from anyone that isn't a Marvel fanboy. So, take what you will. But no, like I said, none of the models really speak to me, and the people whose opinions I trust have said that the few games of War Machine they've played, they just straight up haven't enjoyed for one reason or another. So that's why for me, I'm never even tempted by War Machine. The thought has never crossed my mind, because the few times I'm at a gaming store and I'm looking at the models, again, nothing tickles my fancy. Nothing gets me excited to the point where I'm like, man, I want to play those. I want to get them painted and I want to play games with it. So,
pretty much.
Me, you know, like that's just my opinion on War Machine. I'm not going to say it's a bad game, but
I think you are now technically a hipster.
Why? Because I liked war games before they were cool.
And roller derby.
It's true, but that's the wife. You can't blame me when it's just like, wait.
Sure. Blame the vagina.
Duh.
That's Jaded Gamercast for this week yet again. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.